Welcome to the Illinois Realtors Podcast. I'm John Broadbooks, and today we are talking to 2020 Association President Ed Neves. I've been looking forward to this interview because having spent time with Ed, I know he has an amazing wealth of knowledge about business, whether it's running radio stations or a real estate firm. But there's one thing you may not know about Ed, and that is that Ed has been a Falconer. That's right, a Falconer. And I'll bet this is the only real estate podcast in the nation where we can say the guest has that type of a background. Ed, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks, John.
Ed, we'll talk falconry in a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about your role. What you said is a pivotal time for this association. Why do you feel like this is such a pivotal time for this association?
Well, real estate is an industry that is rapidly changing. I mean, week by week by week. If you just do the research, read everything in the industry, it's accelerating at such a fast pace with iBuyers and consolidation of services and things like that, that you have to be on top of what's happening because it's changing so rapidly. Secondly, as a trade association, all trade associations, if you look at the research, are under fire for membership. It's a challenge to get new members and to keep members. So the old seminar quote, value added, is more critical than ever. More critical than ever, we as a trade association must ensure that we are giving value to our members for their membership dues with each thing that we do. And we do that. I'm not so sure they all know that, but when you get behind the curtain, kind of in the different committees and chairs and board and leadership roles, you realize how much we do give back to the membership. But we have to let them know that. So critical time when everybody wants to know what's in it for them. Our membership. We have 50,000 approximately realtors. And whenever it comes to the association, well, what am I getting for my membership dues? What's in it for me? There's nothing wrong with that. That's just the way it is. So we have to constantly reinforce that and make sure that in our strategic plan, our five pillars of that program, that each and every one of them are constantly evaluated and put forth to the members for the benefit of them.
So making sure members understand the value the Illinois Realtors brings to the table is key. Practically, how are we going to do that?
Well, John, since you're Vice President of Communications, I would start with
I'll
you.
I'll put it back on me.
Yeah, put it back right. On you, yeah, John.
Thank
let's go with that. In addition to that, constantly remind and reinforce. It's pretty much like any industry. I manage a company that's part of a 24-entity corporation. And we had a corporate meeting just yesterday, and the discussion for about an hour was value. How do we communicate value? And around the table, we said, well, we do this, we do that. Like at Illinois Realtors, we have blogs, we have newsletters, we have videos, we have training. But agents are busy, things are busy, and that may not be their priority to read all the communication that goes out. So I think it's inherent upon leadership, upon the board of directors, upon past presidents, association executives, local presidents, this network of ambassadors that understand how this works, for them to constantly, every chance you get, reinforce to the membership what we do for them. And nobody does it better than this organization. I mean, once you see inside everything that the Illinois Realtors as an organization, not the leadership, the staff, the CEO, the vice presidents, what they do day in and day out to service their members is staggering. We must continue to get that message out through our ambassadors, continue to reinforce the value.
I understand you sort of have a working theme coming up for the year ahead. And could you share a little bit what you want to see this sort of the branding, if you will?
Well, it's 2020. So 2020 vision, clear vision, focus on the future. We want everything we do to be focused on our five pillars of our strategic plan, which they have been. This is nothing new, but reinforce that. We go with that because that strategic plan was based on input, research from the members, down to committee level, down to local level. So it's member driven, it's member up, it's not top down management. But just focus on that and make sure that everything we do fits into that plan. And if it doesn't, then we don't do it.
Every good association, as you've touched on, thrives on being able to anticipate what's next for members. How's Illinois Realtors going to do that in the year ahead?
Well, again, we have focus groups at every meeting that we have, every national meeting, every state meeting. Leadership here at the staff level in Springfield have initiated that, I think 3 years now going, if not four, that they will have focus groups of every category you can imagine to get the input from the rank and file. Getting that input in, and it's real-time data, and usually when that data comes in to the staff in Springfield, it's acted upon immediately. This doesn't sit around for a couple years, so we try to do real-time data.
You've been a critical part of the association's efforts to reach lawmakers, and I know you're a federal political coordinator, I believe, for Adam Kinzinger, Representative
That's
Kinzinger.
Correct.
You've helped shape the association's commitment to how it approaches legislation, both at the local, the state, and even the national level, based on the committees that you've been involved with. Is it really hard to sell the value of advocacy to our members?
Well, advocacy is our number one program. Illinois does it better than anybody in the United States. We are a model for what we have set up, for what Gary Clayton and the staff has set up over the years. We have, as you mentioned, I'm assigned to Congressman Adam Kinzinger. I'm his federal political contact, which is FPC is our lingo. Our job is to constantly inform the members of Congress, daily, weekly, monthly, meet with them, set up meetings with the locals of what the issues are when it affects property rights, private property rights. We're nonpartisan. We're not Democrat, Republican, Green, Independent, any of that. We are strictly nonpartisan. Our partisanship is to property owners, to homeowners. That's who we represent. So anytime anything's coming down the pike, whether from the federal government, state, local, we take a look at that. The staff in Springfield, the legal staff, there are thousands of bills that come through the legislature in Springfield. And that staff in Springfield, our staff in Springfield, here's another value, are constantly looking at that. I mean, it's a lot of work to go through those bills, but they'll go through them and look at it and say, this will affect our property rights. This will affect our clients out in the field. And then action is taken on that. So it's a constant thing. But even at the local level, that county board, school board, county city council, the city councils, the town councils, we can affect and influence elections in those areas because everything is local when it comes to politics. And how we would do that, we set up interviews, the state sets up interviews with candidates to see how they fall in line with our mission to protect private property rights, which is paramount. And at the state level, we also have state legislative contacts. SLCs is our lingo. And our job with all the state legislators and the state senators is just like with the federal political contacts, to be there with them, to see them, to support those that support us, and carry on that information process to them representing our members.
We're talking with Ed Neves, the 2020 Association President for Illinois Realtors. And Ed, you've had a varied background. You've done a lot of different things, and I think some of our listeners would be really interested in that. What was your first job?
My first job was in a restaurant, Redwood Inn in Rantoul, Illinois, peeling potatoes back in the back in the dishwashing area in the kitchen. But we had a machine. It was a round machine, and it had a real rough stone bottom to it. And you would throw the potatoes in, and then you'd flick it on, and then that stone and the rough stone sides would shave the peels off perfectly, so you had the most potatoes still left with the least amount of waste. So then you pull them out, and you'd have nice. The potatoes were, 2 or 3 inches around. You'd have a beautifully except when me and my buddies would decide that we were going to go back in the storeroom and goof off and everything, and we would come back, and those 3-inch potatoes were now like half-inch marbles because we took them down to nothing. So I was promoted off the potato machine after that and promoted to dishwasher, and then I wound up staying in that restaurant throughout high school and wound up carving roast beef and ham on a service line. So
that was quite a promotion then.
I worked my way up. It might have been through incompetence, but I wound up with a knife and a fork in my hand, so.
Now, but you decided to go into the service academy. You went to the Air Force Academy.
I had visited the Air Force Academy in my sophomore year and the beginning of my junior year. It's in Colorado Springs. It's on the side of the Rampart Mountains. And I thought, wow, man, this is a cool place. Colorado's beautiful and everything. And I have a military family history. My dad was in B-17s in World War II in Italy. And my brother served on the USS Nautilus in the submarine force for 6 years. And so it's kind of it was in our family, and my uncle was, everybody had a military background. But then I went out there and visited the academy, and I thought, wow, this is really an interesting place. So I started studying it a little bit more. 26 majors, anything from biochemistry to genetics to anything you could imagine at the time, more than just engineering, because West Point and Annapolis were just engineering schools at the time. And so I fell in love with the place, so I thought, what the heck, I'll apply. So I put in my application, and my family, we come from very, very, very humble backgrounds, no wealth, no connections, nothing. So I thought, well, this would be a shot, so I put in the application for Air Force. And then the next year, in the end of my junior year, or the beginning of my senior year, I can't remember exactly, I get a letter one day and in the mail that you know, your application has been received and you've passed the requirements, and we'll let you know. And then a couple weeks later, a bird colonel knocks on the door and wants to come in and announce that I've been appointed to the Air Force Academy by Congressman Springer if I would like to attend, So I thought, wow, that's cool. And then within the next week, I get Annapolis, West Point, Coast Guard, Merchant Marine appointments. It's just funny how the thing just all went out. So I had my choice. And so I picked Air Force because of the multitude of degree programs that I thought were there and that were there. And then the facility, brand new, basically. It was built in the 50s, so it's relatively new. And just beautiful. And I liked the pomp and ceremony and everything about the military, and I thought it was going to be one heck of an education. So I went to Air Force.
So you get out, you graduate from the Air Force Academy. What did you do?
Well, wound up obviously going into the Air Force, and then...
You didn't really have an option then.
Didn't have an option. No, there was no option at that point. Went to flight school, wound up in Charleston, South Carolina, the 437th Military Airlift Wing, C-141s and C-5As at the time. Flew out of Charleston, and we did the Capitol Run. South America was our route, and just pretty much just circled South America every week.
So when you got out of the Air Force, what'd you do?
When I decided to get out of the military, yeah, that's an interesting question, because at the time, Vietnam had wound down, and I never went to Vietnam, but a lot of my colleagues did, obviously. It had wound down, and there was way too many people in the Air Force, so there was a reduction in force. They call it RIF, R-I-F. So everybody was offered early outs of the Air Force, and I took that because I wanted to get back to Illinois. My parents were here. They were getting up in the years, and I decided that I needed to get back to the family. Plus, my brother, who was on submarines for 6 years, that I hadn't seen, because submarine force, when they go out, they're under and they don't come home, was in Normal, Illinois, running a department at the university. So I decided I wanted to spend some time with him. And my parents were in Rantoul, Illinois, so I came back to Central Illinois and took the opportunity, and came back here to work on my graduate degree at Illinois State University.
So how did you get into real estate, Ed?
So back in Illinois now, out of the service. I mean, I'm still in the reserves, but out of active, back in Illinois, and going to graduate school, I needed some income. So my brother got me a job at a local tavern in Bloomington Normal called Pub One. And so I started bartending there while I was going to graduate school. And then the owner of that establishment found a restaurant in Normal that he wanted to open, or established one. And Normal was dry, but they made a deal with the mayor that if you open a restaurant, we'll let you serve alcohol. So we opened this restaurant, bar slash called Pub 2. During the day, a lot of real estate people came in there. At happy hour and at night, it was the city council and the city government. So it was an interesting group that I met and kind of grew up with, we were all the same age. And so this one realtor that had a large company was in there, J.C. Ebach was his name, and he's still around, but he was in there. And finally, he just talked me into it, trying to get my license. So I did. I went and got my license. And then actually for a while, I sold a lot of real estate out of that bar restaurant, just talking to people. It's funny how that works. And since I was the manager, I could take off and show them property anytime I wanted, because at that point it was like, well, I mean, looking back on it, that's kind of rude, but that's what I did. So one thing led to another. And then at some point he says, hey, you need to, you know, jump ship out of the restaurant business and just come full time. So I did. And the rest is history. Now, while licensed, I used my license to buy investment property, to buy apartment buildings, and then eventually to buy some land that we had this real estate company too. So, I mean, radio station.
So you got your real estate license. You've been doing some real estate investing, buying, selling, but you also ran radio stations. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Well, the first one, interesting story, as they all are, but
you're a wealthy story.
Exactly. I had a tavern on Front Street at the time. I had left Pub 2 and bought another business on Front Street in Bloomington, and I called it Falcon Eddie's because my handle in the Air Force was Falcon. Obviously, I trained Falcons, Falcon Eddie. You know,
and we're going to talk about that in a second, so don't worry.
So Falcon Eddie's was the name of it, and it was a pretty hopping joint. We were very, very fortunate with the timing and everything. It was late 80s. And so the local owner of a radio station was in there every night, you know, and talking about his troubles, his woes, and everything else. And finally, I talked him into it. I says, well, I'm a sales manager in real estate. You know, I've done this, I've done that, I've done that. I said, I can run a radio station. And so he just one night says, okay, come on down. I'll never forget walking into that station and all the people that worked there introducing Falcon Eddie as your new manager. You know, it was quite the deal. So one thing led to another, and he wound up getting out of the business, and then I became the partner of the partner in California. And then we had that station. Then he and I bought a station in Champaign, actually from Adlai Stevenson III is who owned it. Funny how the political world is so small. And it was literally elevator music, literally. I mean, it was on all the elevators. There was the FM band on the elevators in Champaign-Urbana that subscribed. So it was kind of a underdeveloped property. So we bought it, and then we let ABC do the research, and we made it the first ABC satellite station downstate that was completely computerized. No DJs, just a little Dell computer, digital streaming. I mean, it was something state of the art. We operated out of a closet, but we switched it to hard rock, ABC hard rock. I mean, it was shock rock. And we became number one in Champaign-Urbana with that station because there was a void. The research indicated a void. You know, I've always been a research nut, and the research that we did was, where's the void in a radio station? It was just a massive void. So it was an interesting time, a lot of work, a lot of headaches, but a lot of rewards. I mean, it was fun. I got the most fun out of writing commercials and putting commercials on the air and then going to the event and seeing success for the client. That's what I got the most fun out of, that entire experience. So then we sold them. We lost our shirt on one. I made a lot of money on the other one, and I think we break even. I think all my investments throughout my career, my life, I'm about even, so that's okay.
It's better than being
even's down. Okay.
Yeah. You've had a lifelong fascination with birds, and this resulted in a college gig as well in the Air Force Academy. So how did this all begin?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we were not a well-to-do family at all. So on Sundays after church, you know, for entertainment, as I look back on it, Dad and Mom and I, my brothers and sisters were out of the nest by then. We would...
No pun intended.
No, out of the nest. How about that? Yeah, good job. We'd go out in the country. We'd pick blackberries and just kind of look at birds. And they gave me every bird book known to man. And at that time, the bird books had little 33 RPM yellow vinyl and green vinyl and pink vinyl records in them. And I would listen to those, you know, while I was doing different chores and stuff. And so I learned the songs of the birds. So to this day, when I hear a song, I can pretty much tell you if it's a North American bird, you know, what bird it is. Or I can tell by their flight. So I had this thing for birds. So I go out to the academy. And I thought I was a pretty good wrestler in high school, you know. So I went out there and, you know, and I decided I'm going to go out for wrestling at the collegiate level. Because, you know, I'm pretty good. I'm cool, you know. I thought I was good, but I ran into two guys from California that just had me in pretzels. I mean, they manhandled me right off the bat, week after week after week. And finally, I thought, man, I'm not going to go through 4 years of this. So I talked to the coach, and I said, you know, coach, maybe I'll do something else. He said, okay, yeah, fine. So I'm going down the hallway. Of course, we're at attention, our chin's in, and, you know, you're marching along. The whole first year is a basic training at these service schools. And I noticed on the bulletin board, try out for cadet falconer, you know. I thought, ooh, it's a bird, you know, what's that? So the falcon is the mascot of the Air Force Academy. The actual mascot is a Jer falcon from the Arctic Circle. It's a white falcon with black dots, and it's about three and a half feet big. I mean, it's big. It takes two hands to hold it, and their talons wrap around your wrist, on each wrist when you're holding them. Big bird, magnificent bird, beautiful bird. We had two of those. But we also had 24 prairie falcons, which were falcons from Colorado, just from the area, actually from Monument Springs, which was halfway between the springs and Denver. And we would get the birds, and then you would train them from when they're like 2 or 3 or 4 days old, three times a day. Anyhow, back to the process. So I saw this thing, so I went down. I thought that was interesting. So I went down. There's like 20 of us in this room that were going to try out, and each class picks four, and I got was fortunate enough to get selected. So I became a cadet falconer, which is actually a varsity sport. And it's kind of, looking back on it, it's a PR job, because whenever we were on leave or home for anything, we took a bird with us. And we appeared at high schools on TV shows, radio shows, everything else. You know, one of the most exposed deal, we went to, the Air Force at the time had a pretty good football team and ranked in the top 20 and was invited to the Sugar Bowl to play Tennessee. And Tennessee scored 21 points in the first 3 minutes, and the game was over.
As Tennessee tends to do, but being an alum of Tennessee.
Oh, are you?
Yes,
it was unbelievable. But at the Sugar Bowl, we were there for 2 weeks, and they put us up at a hotel on Bourbon Street, us and the birds. You know, so we we got the birds there. We're out with them at night, you know, showing people the birds and stuff. I mean, it was kind of a fun time, but we're on the float. So all that stuff, that's kind of what we did with the birds. It was a public relations, a recruiting tool is what it was.
Now, Ed, you and I have talked many times about your career, and there's one story that stands out. It's one of the funniest stories I've ever heard, and it relates to your falconry. Tell me about the time you thought it would be a good idea to launch one of those magnificent birds inside a closed arena.
Oh, yes, that was a great idea. That was a bad idea. But what we thought, me and a couple other falconer buddies, we're flying these birds at football games outdoors, you know, throughout the season. But in the winter, nobody gets to see the birds. So we decided, well, let's fly a falcon inside at a basketball game at the academy. And so can't be a prairie falcon, because they're a big bird. So we decided that we would get a kestrel, which is a common name is sparrowhawk. And in Illinois, if you're driving down the interstate and you see a little bird fluttering over the ditch in the middle, and just looks like a little bird, but it's hovering, that's a sparrowhawk, and they're getting mice and that kind of stuff. Smallest falcon in the world, but it's a beautiful bird, and it's about the size of it's not even the size of a robin, it's just a little bit bigger than a sparrow. So we figured this is perfect, indoors, this little bird, so we trained it, we thought we trained it. So we had it all trained, so the big day comes, and we didn't tell anybody what we were doing, which was, in retrospect, a very bad decision. So because we had a bird colonel, there's an analogy, right, bird colonel was in charge of us, and he happened to be at the game, and he was watching. So he saw, you know, we got up there, and we had the little kestrel, and we let him loose. It flies down once. It does one pass, and just like it's supposed to, and the crowd's going nuts and everything. And then it goes up, and it starts circling the crowd, just above the crowd, you know. And I'm looking at it, and it's not coming down, and it's not listening to any commands. And it heads for a woman, big hairdo that she had, you know, just right into her. And then, of course, it's got its talons stuck in her hair, and she's freaking out and running around, and the bird's flapping. I mean, it was not good. So the handlers up above managed to calm the bird down, get the bird out, calm the woman down and everything else. But the end result was all three of us had rifles on our shoulders marching out on the terrazzo for several weekends after that. So never did that again. That was a one-time deal.
We've been talking with Ed Neves, 2020 president of Illinois Realtors, about what he sees for the year ahead, and really, when you look at it, for many years ahead. Ed, I want to thank you for being on the podcast. If for no other reason, the Falcon story makes it, but also just the breadth of your career. To hear this podcast and many others, you can just go to just about any other service and download them. We're on the Android, iTunes, illinoisrealtors.org. /podcast will get to us. It's everywhere you want to be. Ed, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks, John. It was my pleasure.